I am drawing the Rockies, and I am going to take any opportunity I can to talk more about Corey Dickerson. The plantar fasciitis just absolutely destroyed any sort of establishment of his legitimacy that should have happened. The talent at the plate is legit. Even an injury risk version of Dickerson is still probably a pretty close to a top 50 player, and my guess is that he is going to be taken somewhere in the 7th to 8th round range this year, which is going to be prime value at that point. Episode 72 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Gianella and George Bissell. Tonight's Mike's birthday, so happy birthday, Mike.
Thanks, Brett.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Thanks, George.
Happy Star Wars Day, Mike.
Yeah, I saw Star Wars today too, but I'm not allowed to talk about that because I think I'll be killed. So we'll just move on. Brett and George haven't seen it, which surprised me. I thought George with no kids and whatnot would have like seen it already.
I've been writing about relief pitching, so
yeah. Do you want to tell our audience what you've been going well, up? We'll be up on the site.
Yeah, we're wrapping up our categorical breakdown series. So I have holds and quality starts goes up the next day with Matt Collins. So I've written now 2,000 words on basically setup men. So get ready for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we're wrapping that up. We got the holidays coming up. It's kind of fun. I can't wait to get into, you know, more of the 2016 stuff once we start the new year. That's the fun stuff.
It's going to be exciting. The next time you hear a podcast from us, it's going to be during our positional preview series. So we are going to be back to weekly, and we're going to be talking about catchers because catchers are awesome. We have a fun exercise for us today and for you, hopefully. And we will get right into it in a quick second. Okay, so that was more like 30 seconds, but we're back. What we are doing tonight is we are going to go team by team through the majors. We're going to trade off teams. And we are going to bring up a player who, you know, we hate to use the word. So we're not going to use the word. We are going to talk about a player who we think is going to be, a good value this season, based on where we expect them to be going. Now, this is really early to have this exercise, so some of these players probably won't go as late as we think because some of that stuff just ramps up as we get into March. But it's never a bad time to start looking for undervalued players. So we're going to start with Mike and the Baltimore Orioles. We're going to go east to west in the American League, and then do the same in the National League. Mike, who you got in the Orioles?
Well, yeah, I was looking at it, and I was tempted to take Chris Tillman because of his age and his profile, but I looked at his declining strikeout numbers and decided no. Instead, I'm going with J.J. Hardy. He's an example of a player I like. He's someone who I thought people thought would bounce back last year and didn't. His shoulder woes continued. But if you've been paying attention to him in the offseason, he's very quietly been working on a strengthening program. He's 33. I don't expect him to suddenly bounce back to what he did 2 years ago. But if he does hit 15 home runs, you know, or 13 to 15 home runs, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. And that makes him, to me, kind of a deeper mix back end play. In a mock that I did, a 12-team mock, he wasn't even drafted. I think there's a little bit of opportunity there with him. And again, keep in mind, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for really deep guys. We're not looking for, you know, somebody that's so obvious where it's like, you know, oh, you know, he should be taken in the eighth round. He's getting taken in the 10th round.
All right, Boston Red Sox. I'm going to go with sort of a rebound guy in Clay Buchholz. Yeah, I'm not counting on him to give you more than 120, 150 innings. He's 31 now. He's in the final year of his deal. I just think you look at the numbers last season, and he actually posted his highest strikeouts per nine total since 2008, lowest walks per nine of his career. Yet the ERA was, it was okay, 3.26, pretty good. But you look at the BABIP, 329. I think he just got victimized a little bit by the defense behind him. You saw things turn for the Red Sox once they got Hanley Ramirez out of left field. I think they're going to look much better with Bradley, Betts, and Castillo out there next year. I think Buchholz is going to pitch well, and I think you can get him for nothing in a mixed league. I don't think anyone's going to want to touch him. So I think the innings he does give you, if you look at DRA, I think he was a top 20 guy in DRA this past season. So I really like Buchholz, and I think he's a pretty good value really late in a draft.
Sounds good. I have the shared misery of drawing the Yankees here, which is an interesting team. It's always an interesting team to look for value on, but I think I'm gonna like where Brian McCann's value is in 2016, and you know, I feel like I've said this in years past, and nothing's really changed with McCann. He's continued to be a, you know, solid but not elite fantasy catcher. He hit 26 home runs last year, which was actually his career high, but the batting average has remained low, which has been a consistent theme over the last four seasons. I think that, you know, I think he's getting older. He doesn't really have much upside on top of this, but he doesn't need to. And you know, he's a player who should be taken within the first, you know, three or four catchers off the board. And he's exactly the type of player that people will occasionally get cute about and then take other players ahead of him. So I think another 230 to 240 season with 25 homers, I think, is absolutely reasonable and pretty bankable at this point, especially given his track record of health the last couple of years. So that's my spiel on McCann. Mike, back to you for whichever team is next. I'm at the wrong part of the screen. It's Tampa Yep. Bay. Tampa Bay.
Which is always an interesting place for sleepers. I'm going to go with somebody. There's an obvious sleeper here, but I'm going to bypass him. And I'm going to go with Logan Morrison. Morrison is just one of those players. You know, I know the batting average stunk last year, but there was a downtick in BABIP that I don't think, you know, you would have expected. He's moving to a better park. The lineup isn't necessarily better, but this is a guy who hit 17 home runs and stole eight bases last year. Even if there's a little bit of an uptick in the BABIP, he can produce even more value. Again, this is a deep mixed and maybe even an AL-only play or somebody that you want to stream in your lineup if you have the bench options and you're playing in a week where Tampa's facing a lot of righties. But I like the park he's moving to. I like the profile. And I think he's somebody who, again, he's not going to light the world on fire, but he could hit 20 home runs. And if he does that with 8 to 10 steals, I think there's some value here.
All right, so I've got Toronto. And I'm going to go with, I could give you an hour on Marcus Stroman, but I'm not going to go there. I'm going to go with Kevin Pillar, just because I feel like people are going to vastly underrate him this upcoming season. He was actually a top 40 hitter in standard mixed leagues, according to your valuations, Mike, which sounds crazy, but when you look at the numbers, I mean, he stole 25 bases, hit 278, did hit 12 home runs. I don't think he's ever going to be excellent in any one category, but you have to like what he gives you across the board. He scored almost 80 runs as well last year. I just think he does a little bit of everything, and I think people are going to be hesitant to really invest in him. So I think he'll actually end up being one of the better values in the outfield this upcoming year, because I think just so many people are going to steer clear of him and say, oh, he's a clear bust. He's not going to do that again. And I think he'll actually come close. And the stolen bases, I mean, if you're in a roto league, those have a ton of value, and that's where you'd want to go as far as an investment. So back to you, Brett.
All right. I am going to take a pitcher this time. I'm going to take the only starting pitcher in Chicago who does not throw with his left hand, and talk about Eric Johnson for a little bit. He's had an interesting last couple of years. He was, you know, on top 100 prospect list heading into 2014 after a really strong 2013 season, and the train just completely derailed in 2014. There have been, you know, a lot of stories as to why that happened, and there have been some mechanical tweaks, some stuff that even Johnson himself has pointed at, sort of between the ears, that he's gotten a little bit better at. But he was really strong in AAA in 2015, and was, you know, held his own back in the majors when he got there for a 6-start stretch in September. Struck out 30 and 35 innings, put a few too many guys on base, gave up a few too many home runs. But you know, he's not the type of pitcher who's going to be a real strong mixed league, like shallow mixed league option for anybody. But in deeper mixed and AL only formats, I think he's especially in AL only formats, I think he's someone who could really, he might hurt you a little in WHIP, but the offense is going to be pretty good in Chicago. I think the defense is going to be a little bit improved. So I would not be surprised to see him check in as a, you know, as an $8 to $10 pitcher in AL only formats, which I think he's going to go for a little bit less than that come March. Back to you, Mike.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right on him. I have the Indians. This is kind of an interesting team, and that they strike me as a team that could sign one or two free agents and make some of these picks moot. But I am going to go with somebody, you know, speaking of AL only, who, you know, I think could provide value in that format, and that's Abraham Almonte. This is definitely a crash and burn kind of pick, and not somebody I would recommend in any other format. But, you know, what I see here is somebody who has opportunity. He's not really that old, you know, and in about half a season last year, he certainly wasn't great. But he did provide a little bit of power. He provided a little bit of speed, and the average wasn't awful. You know, this all, you know, sounds like damning with faint praise, which it is. And I don't really like him as a player, but as a fantasy commodity, it's not really hard to see him in that lineup and in that park, you know, doing just enough to kind of come through as say a fourth or a fifth outfielder. And I just don't see him going for much, because a lot of people, even in AL only, are going to be looking at him, you know, as a failed prospect or a non-prospect. And these are the kind of guys I like to scoop up. I did this a lot in Tout Wars NL last year, where I got guys who were bottom-of-the-barrel starters. If Almonte's starting, I could see him easily going for $4 to $5 and doubling your investment there.
So Detroit's a bit of an odd team. Once again, it's a very top-heavy roster. There's not a whole lot if you're looking at prospects coming up, anything like that. there's not a whole lot there. So the one sort of younger guy who I think could take a step forward, and I think it's Nick Castellanos. He's only going to be 24 this upcoming season. Did hit 15 home runs last year, hit 255. I don't think he's ever going to take that step and really be an elite fantasy option at third base, but if you're looking for a guy who could take a step forward, I think it's him. There's just not a whole lot of interesting names here. It's just a lot of old veteran types and a couple old bounce backs. Like, if you want to bank on Victor Martinez bouncing back or something like that, you know, a lot of risk there, but there just isn't a whole lot outside of, you know, guys like Kinsler, Cabrera, JD Martinez. It's kind of a weird team, so I'm going to go with Castellanos. If you're going to speculate on one guy in Detroit, I kind of like him a little bit.
That brings me to the Royals. So there are some fun names that you can talk about here, but I'm not going to talk about any of them. Instead, I'm going to talk about someone who is likely to be completely worthless in anything but super, super deep leagues. But I'm going to talk about Dylan Gee, as crazy as that might sound. The Royals right now have a pretty injury prone rotation, and including pitchers that may just be better suited for the bullpen. And we saw what Danny Duffy did out of the bullpen towards the end of last year. He has certainly not proven a ton as a starting pitcher recently. Chris Young is not a bastion of health. Neither is Chris Medlin. Dylan Gee has signed a minor league deal, so he's not on the 40-man roster, but he is exactly the type of player who I would expect to just show up in Kansas City and win 12 games for no reason whatsoever. That defense will make anyone look pretty good, and Gee puts a lot of balls in play. It really did not suit him well when he was with the Mets, as evidenced by his 355 BABIP against. But if he gets any sort of chance in Kansas City, I could see him holding down the fifth starter job for a little while, and given the defense and the win potential, I think he could end up being a worthwhile either probably not end game but probably reserve pick in AL only formats.
I think we're back to me, and so I'm going to move over to the Minnesota Twins. And, you know, this is kind of a team, I don't want to say they're an anti-sleeper team or an anti-bargain, but you've got some guys like Byron Buxton and Miguel Sano, who, regardless of how you feel about them, most certainly aren't going to be cheap. Something I like to do on a team like this, I like the post-hype guys. And so a guy I'm looking at here, and again, this is deep, deep league value, is Danny Santana. He's not even projected to start. It looks like Eduardo Escobar is going to start out with the job, but I don't view him as a significant obstacle. And, you know, we all warned against Santana last year, and I'm not saying to pay him or draft him where he was taken in 2015, but what I am saying is there's some very deep league opportunity here for a guy who can steal some bases, has a little bit of pop, and should be able to hit enough to translate those steals if he gets on the field into value. I think even if he only isn't a starter, there's enough of him on the diamond that I could see him as a sub getting 300, 350 at-bats on this team. And again, you know, we're looking at AL only. We're looking at somebody I think you might be able to pluck a dollar or two down on, who I think could easily return that if he gets the bag. So, you know, I like players like this as, you know, as undervalued or as targets where no one's expecting anything, but there's a little bit of ceiling.
Yeah, where do you start with the Houston Astros? I mean, there's 100 guys who you could list as real exciting names. And I'm going to go with a pitcher who was pretty good last year. Lance McCullers is the guy. He's going to be 22 this season, so that's going to be exciting. 3.62 deserve on average. Struck out over a batter per inning, 48% ground ball rate. He only had 125 innings this past season, so I think with a few more innings, his number is going to look exponentially better. I'm interested to see where he's going to be ranked because I haven't really given a whole lot of thought to it yet. But would you guys say he's a top 50 guy coming in next year? Or how would you rank McCullers even right now? I'm curious.
I think you could make the argument, but it's really an upside argument. I think he's probably just right outside the top 50. Probably somewhere around 60-ish
yeah,
for me.
Absolutely.
I might have a little higher, but I agree with Brett. I see you. This is an upside play, and he's a good, you know, it's good to have him as a topic for the show as a result. But probably the most aggressive you get with ranking him is, you know, just inside the top 50, and I think that's aggressive.
Yeah, I really like the strikeouts. I think he's going to be pretty good. So if I'm looking late in a draft, that's kind of the direction I want to go with my picks. Is I want the guy who I know can strike people out. It just gives him sort of a higher floor fantasy wise. So I like McCullers, and right now he's penciled in as their fifth starter right now in Houston. So yeah,
he's pretty good. George, I agree with you. Like guys that can strike, I'd rather take a guy has the potential to strike guys out. You know, than someone like Phil Hughes, who, you know, even if he bounces back, the strikeout potential isn't high.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Without
exactly.
Doubt.
Yeah. So that leaves me with the Angels, which just really sucks. So rather than talk about these fringe AL-only guys that they'll probably have at the bottom of their lineup, I'm going to talk about Albert Pujols. I think that Pujols was pretty well valued coming into 2015, and obviously he started the season very well. His first half was really strong, at least for post prime Pujols. He was he had an 855 OPS in the first half with 26 homers. And it came with a 255 batting average, but you don't really expect a good batting average from him these days anyway. I think people are going to focus on his second half numbers, which were really not good. That OPS in the second half dropped to 707, the batting average dropped to 231, and the home runs dropped almost, not quite in half because it's fewer plate appearances, but it was 14 home runs in 72 games, which is still a 30 home run pace, but it's a much less attractive proposition overall. I think people are going to look at that combined with his age, and I think this is going to be the year that people really run in the opposite direction from Pujols. I'll be really curious to see what his value is in some mocks in January and February. So I think that'll go a long way to determine whether he really is going to be undervalued or not. But I could see him being the type of player who kind of slips out of, like, what was he? He was like generally a top 50 player this season.
Yeah, it was around there.
Yeah, I think we might get to the point where he falls outside the top like 75. And if he's around with, you know, like a sixth or a seventh round pick, I think that there is still plenty of upside in the power to make him a nice value at that point.
Yeah, in the mock I did, he went in the ninth round of a 12 teamer, which actually he went right at 100, and I think there's some value there, even with a 12-teamer.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's even later than I would have thought. Yeah, it's a...
Well, you know how these expert mocks are. You know, people tend to trip over themselves to, you know, be smart.
This is true.
So, I think I'm up.
You are.
I have the A's, and you know the A's are a team you could point to a lot of guys always as sleepers. I'm gonna kind of go with. You know, something you don't really think of when you think of a sleeper undervalued player, and go with the closer. I go with Sean Doolittle. I just like him because I've always liked the profile, and you know, he's one of those pitchers who has some performance record after he came back from the injury, but because it's very small and because there aren't a lot of saves attached to it, I think he's gonna slip a little bit among closers and be toward the back end, and I see some more value coming with him potentially than that. you know, even if the strikeouts don't bounce back to his 2014 K per nine of almost 13, if he strikes out 10 per nine or comes somewhere in that ballpark, there's still a lot of value. You know, people are going to look at the ERA, which was close to four, but the peripherals for him across the board were better than that. You know, again, it's a closer, so, you know, you don't want to get too cute or take him too far ahead. But from what I've seen in the one or two mocks I've done, he's really slipping. You know, and Brett, to your point earlier, you know, this could be a moot point in a couple months if people see how he's doing in the spring or if everybody comes to the same conclusion. But right now, he looks like a bit of a value play.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, Seattle Mariners. I think Jerry DePoto pulled a Steve Harvey when he announced that Steve Cishek was going to be their closer this season. How else do you explain this? I think he meant to say Cishek is not going to be our closer to open the year, but I guess he's the guy. And you look at him last year, he was abysmal. 4.71 deserved run average, CFIP of 105, which is below average. And he walked nearly 4.5 batters per nine. I don't see how he lasts a couple weeks even as their closer. I don't really get it. And I can't see him closing for them. So I'm going to go with Joaquin Benoit, who's a guy I really like. I'm shocked he's not their closer. You know, the age is obviously a concern. He's 38. But when you look at the performance over the last couple of years, especially the last two seasons, he's one of only seven pitchers to post a DRA in the top 15 in back-to-back years. He's the lowest BABIP of any reliever in the game in the past two seasons. It's under 200. I just think Benoit is great, and he's been one of the best relief pitchers in the game for the last 6 years, since 2010, and he's only had an ERA over 3 once during that stretch, so he's going to be great in Seattle. I don't see any way he's not spectacular in that Cishek loses that job pretty quickly there. So Benoit is going to be a kind of a steal on draft day because he's not going to have the job when you pick him.
Yeah, I think Benoit is a fantastic reliever. It'll be interesting to see whether Cishek can rediscover some of that magic.
I'm going to go with no.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I've been ranting about him for what feels like weeks now.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone's got their guys. So I get the Rangers, and as terrible as the Angels were to do this exercise with, that's how fun the Rangers are to do this exercise with. I know I'm going to surprise you guys and say that I am not going to choose Jurickson Profar, even though I remain a huge Jurickson Profar advocate. I am instead going to talk about I'm not. I'm not going to talk about Martin Perez either, even though I'm also a huge Martin Perez advocate. I am going to talk about Shin-Soo Choo. Shin-Soo Choo's overall numbers look pretty good. There's certainly an improvement over last year, but that doesn't reflect just how good he was for the majority of the season this past year. He's Mike, I'm curious before I keep talking, where did he go in your mock that you just did?
I'm trying to
Do you remember?
No, I don't, and I can't find it easily. I'm sorry. I'm kind of playing with the spreadsheet as we're talking.
Oh, no worries. All right, I'm going to keep talking about Chu then.
If I find it, I'll let you know.
Sounds good.
Oh, here he is. He went in the 16th round.
That's disgusting.
That's really insane. Shin-Soo Choo, had I not taken so many outfielders, I probably would have grabbed him.
Yeah, Shin-Soo Choo, this is going to sound kind of nuts. I'm on board with Choo as easily a top 100 player this year, maybe even top 75. He was fantastic last year, and really nobody has noticed. His April was absolutely abysmal, but he had a really strong May, fell back a little bit in June, and then in the second half he just absolutely went off. His line in the second half was 343, 455, 560, with 11 home runs and even a couple of steals for good measure. I mean, he's not going to be someone who steals any more than 3 to 5 bases going forward, even if he did start running a little bit in the second half. I think that he is I think he's a good bet to hit close to 300 with 20 home runs and have a whole lot of counting stats. And I think he's pretty safe at this point. He's going to be hitting in a good lineup, and I am probably going to own him in most leagues. And if you're in an OBP league, that is even better because he's even more valuable in those leagues. Chu is someone who will get his due, but clearly is not getting it now. And I don't think we'll tick up enough before drafts in March to avoid him being a really, really strong value. So that's it for the American League, unless and you guys want to fight me on Chu.
No, that's a really good pick, actually. And you're right about that, where you went in that draft. That was too late.
I could argue that was about 7 rounds too late.
It was at least 5 rounds too late. I think I had too many outfielders at that point, though. Which is what happens in 12-team drafts. You teams kind of slot those outfielders in, and then they don't want to they don't want to be have an overabundance. But in retrospect, I probably should have taken him.
This is true. This reminds me of Chu reminds me now of where Jason Wirth was a couple of years ago. Signed the big contract, really kind of sucked at the beginning of the contract, and then just got really good. And it took people a while to notice that he was just really good. Wirth has his own problems, mostly with staying healthy, but Wirth worked his way back up to being a legit second outfielder in most formats, and I think Chu's on his way there. He's going to be 33 on opening day, so he's not super old, but he's old enough that there will be plenty of opportunities there. But that's enough about Shinsu Chu.
Yeah, and I have to do the Braves, which is really awful. I everybody's talked about how bad the Braves are, but I'm looking at their roster now, and it doesn't seem like they're really going to sign anybody else. So even if they keep Freddie Freeman, this team is bad. They're really bad. So to pick somebody from a bad team, I could go with, Eric Ibar is probably the deeper mixed sleeper, but I'm going to avoid him and go with a really deep sleeper in Adonis Garcia. I don't see him, obviously repeating the power output of last year when he hit 10 home runs and 198 plate appearances, but he's going to play. He's going to play just because there's nobody else there, and he's going to be facing teams that in a lot of games that are just going to pitch to him and pitch to a lot of those players. Like, it just doesn't matter. So even if he hits, say, 12 to 14 home runs at third base and the average doesn't completely crater, I know there's a lot of caveats with this pick, I think he'll play enough in NL only where he's going to be a value. And he's somebody that everybody is going to ignore. I think there's a lot of players on this Braves team beyond Ibar and Markakis, or beyond the top of the lineup, that people are just going to completely ignore or blow off. And of those players, Garcia is probably the one, and this is a if I have to pick somebody from this team, he's the if I have to pick somebody kind of guy.
So I got the Miami Marlins. And Carter Capps. No, I'm just kidding. I love Carter Capps, but I'm going to give you a real actual sleeper. Marcell Ozuna. It's probably the most obvious sleeper out there, for me anyway. He might not be on the Miami Marlins. We don't know. He's been almost traded multiple times, it feels like, in the past year alone, so... we'll see, but you look at his numbers, and after he came back, obviously brutal start to the year, but after he came back in mid-August, he hit .278 with a .469 slugging percentage, 6 home runs and 172 plate appearances, a 115 weighted RC plus, so WRC plus, I should say. He was good down the stretch, and I think the power's back, and there's not a lot of young guys who hit for the kind of power he did. Remember, he hit 23 home runs in 2014. In the past 5 years, only 15 hitters aged 23 or younger have accomplished that feat. So he's in some pretty elite company as a power hitter, and he's still ridiculously young. He's only going to be, I think, 25 this year. He's going to be good, and I think he's going to be motivated, and he's going to be a steal late in drafts. So Marcell Ozuna, go get him.
I am with you on Ozuna. I draw the Mets, and you I guess I have to pick a bat here because no one is in their right mind is going to claim that any Mets arm is going to be undervalued. Although I do wonder whether, this is a topic for another day, I do wonder whether the incredible rise and hype of Noah Syndergaard is going to make either Matt Harvey or Jacob deGrom comparatively undervalued. But we're not going to go there yet because that's going to be a February and March phenomenon, and I'm curious to keep an eye on that. But I am going to talk about another hitter similar to my Chew analogy from before, who was really terrible to start the season and then ended up being much better than anyone I think gave him credit for, and that would be Curtis Granderson. Granderson's a little bit older than Chew, but from June on last year, Granderson hit 269 with 20 homers, 7 steals, and scored 71 runs. So he even before then, he was still getting on base and scoring runs. He scored 98 on the season. He had the most number of home runs since he was playing in Yankee Stadium. And his batting average ticked up mostly because he just didn't. He is not the strikeout artist that he got credit for being while he was with the Yankees anymore. He still strikes out plenty, but he's not a guy who's resigned to hit in the 220 to 230 range. He hit 259 last year, and I think hitting in the 250 to 260 range is repeatable. And if you're in a league that counts OBP instead of batting average, then Granderson takes a really big jump up. But you know, he's going to be 35 on opening day. So he's got a little bit more age risk, but I think that's going to be factored in as well. And I think he's going to be going even later than Chew went in some of these mocks. So lots of value for old outfielders these days, I guess, in the teams that I have been randomly assigned.
I have the Phillies, which, you know, the interesting thing about the Phillies is that unlike the Braves, because they started their rebuild, they're not going to be good in 2016, and the pitching in particular isn't going to be good. But there's some players here from a fantasy perspective that are interesting. And the guy I want to talk about a little bit in that regard is Aaron Altherr. He's somebody who, you know, he's not a top-of-the-line prospect, so he's not going to be, you know, drafted or auctioned with that kind of sex appeal. But the guy produced last year. He produced, you know, across three levels, in both the power and the speed departments. And, you know, I don't think that's repeatable in terms of the raw numbers, but if he winds up putting up 12 to 15 home runs, and I think more pertinently in the speed department, 15 steals, which I think he can do, you know, I think there's enough there for him to be viable in not only in NL only, but in some deep mix formats where I think he's going to be completely ignored. And Brett, you've hit on this a couple of times. In leagues that use on base, Altherr really, you know, has some value there, and he's had, you know, the thing I really dug about him last year, you know, in the majors, is he held up that walk rate for the most part for the minors. So, you know, he's somebody you hold up the walk rate, the on base is there, the steals are going to be there as well. I could just see him being one of those players who gets ignored in deep mixed and winds up filling in on more than a few rosters before the season's over.
Washington Nationals, I think Michael Taylor's going to get a lot of hype, but I actually think the most attractive value sort of young sleeper on the Nationals is actually in the rotation. I mean, when you look at it, you obviously have Scherzer and Strasburg, but I think actually maybe the third best pitcher in that rotation, it's not Gio Gonzalez or Tanner Roark. I think it might be Joe Ross. He's only 22. He'll be just pushing 23 this season. He wasn't a huge prospect. I think unless you're in a sort of a deep league or a big keeper league where everybody's following prospects intently, I think in more shallow mixed leagues, I don't think a lot of people were paying a ton of attention to him coming up. He put up some really terrible minor league numbers just because he pitched in some awful places. I think in the Cal League, he had some outings in like Lancaster where he gave up like 10 runs and stuff like that. So the numbers last year were good. He faded down the stretch, but I like what I saw from him. 8 strikeouts per 9, the ground ball rate, 54%. That's pretty good. I think if they can stretch him out a little bit more and he can get to, 150, 60 innings, he's going to be a pretty good guy to own in deeper mixed leagues, I think. So I'm going to go with Joe Ross for the Nationals.
I draw the Cubs here, and this is just a completely fruitless exercise.
Terrible.
Since they're not that the Cubs are not drenched in fantasy value, but to find any sort of sleeper on this roster is just about impossible. So I guess I'm going to take. I don't even know if this is a proper cop out. I am gonna talk about Anthony Rizzo. I was not really on board last year with the whole Rizzo being taken in the first round thing, and he was really good, but I think he was probably just shy of where those people were expecting him to get to. He took small steps back in batting average and in home runs. He knocked in some more runs and scored some more. But I'm really curious to see where he's going to go this year, because there's just so much hype around all of the new faces, and Rizzo has reinforced his value in my mind by just coming pretty close to repeating his 2014 season, even though he didn't quite become the 300 hitting, 40-ish home run hitter that I think some people who took him in the mid first round this year were hoping he'd be. I don't know if he's still a first rounder, but if he's not, he's gotten pretty close, and I think it's probably going to be in that 15 to 20-ish range. I wonder how many leagues he's going to go behind Chris Bryant in, and I would take Rizzo over Bryant in 2016. Obviously it's different in keeper leagues, but Mike, do you remember where he went in your mock?
I thought he went higher than he went 11th overall, and Bryant went a little bit after that.
All right, maybe I'm completely wrong that people are going to overlook Rizzo a little bit, but this is just a shitty team to pick a sleeper on. They just don't exist.
Can I ask something about that actually, just from this year's standpoint? I know in Dynasty or keeper he isn't, but do you think there's a possibility that Addison Russell could be a sleeper? Just because I think some people are looking at him strictly from a 2016 standpoint and seeing that it's going to be a consolidation year for him. Do you think that maybe he could be a little undervalued, or think that just everybody on the Cubs, it's a hype train, and they're all going to possibly be at par or overvalued?
Oh, yeah, I think it's the latter. I think there's no chance of getting any, unless you really believe in like Kyle Hendricks. I don't think there's any chance you're going to get a player on the Cubs at par or better this year.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I was just kind of playing devil's advocate and wanted to see what you thought. Yeah. That means I get to move to the Reds, which we're right back to it. We want to do the National League last because this is really where the sleepers are. And, the National League is just terrible as far as a lot of these teams go. So there's a couple guys I could go with here, but I'm going to go with Zach Cozart just because he's coming off of an injury. No one has ever really highly regarded him. He's a little bit older, so he doesn't have the sheen of a younger guy. And regardless of whether, this is why I like him, regardless of whether he bats ninth or if they lead him off, which they're actually talking about, if they move Billy Hamilton down to the bottom of the lineup and put the pitcher eighth, Cozart is going to score some runs with Votto being either two or three slots behind him. So if the Reds do bat the pitcher eighth, you know, this year, which they're talking about, I think Cozart's got some sneaky value in him just from a run scoring proposition, just because Votto's going to be one or two slots ahead of him. And, you know, Joey Votto, as we know, can hit. And I think Cozart is an NL-only guy. You know, he hit for power last year. I don't know if that's repeatable. But he's a guy I could see providing some sneaky back-end value because of the injury and because a lot of people are going to forget about what he did last year.
Speaking of rebuilding franchises, the Milwaukee Brewers, I think there's a pair of pitchers, Taylor Jungman, obviously, and the other guy who I've always kind of liked more, Jimmy Nelson. What's interesting to me about Nelson is he changed a little bit last year in that he added a curveball, something he hadn't done previously. He's 26 now, but the curveball generated a nearly a 34% whiff per swing rate, which is actually above the league average. It's an above average pitch, and he's got three pitches that actually generate above average swings and misses, the slider and the four seam as well. So he's got swing and miss stuff. The control is not really great, but I like a lot of the things he does, and I think he could get a little bit better this upcoming season. He was close to, he had 177 innings this past year. I've just kind of always liked Jimmy Nelson, and I feel like one of these years he's going to kind of put it together. He's actually probably, believe it or not, their ace if you're looking at the depth chart right now. He might be their number one starter, so that's a little bit terrifying, but the innings are going to be there, and I've always kind of liked the stuff, and I feel like he could potentially put it together for, you know, for next to nothing in a deeper mixed league. I kind of like Jimmy Nelson a little bit.
No respect for Kyle Loesch, huh?
Is he even on this roster here?
I don't know.
Yeah.
He's Kyle Loesch. Who cares?
Yeah, it wouldn't have shocked me if you told me he was. Yeah.
I think he is still on the team. Maybe?
I thought he was too. Although
he still has a year left on his deal.
Oh, man.
We're fantasy experts. But
I get the Pirates, and I am going to talk about not an old guy for a change. I'm going to talk about Gregory Polanco. Polanco is someone who was pretty universally a top 10 fantasy prospect before making his debut in 2014. He was, you know, not great in 2014, but ran. And in 2015, he was a little bit better, but still not great, and ran. 27 stolen bases, and if that doesn't seem like a lot, then you should read the articles that we ran at BP about the landscape of the stolen base these days, because 27 is more than you think. Polanco is also going to hit at the top of the lineup likely, and he scored 83 runs last year in a year where he only had a 320 on base. The frame is there for him to hit for more power, and what I like to see year to year is I like to see an improvement in just any sort of power. He had an isolated power of 0.098 in 2014, and that jumped up to 125 in 2015. He hit 9 doubles in 89 games in 2014. He had 35 doubles in 153 games last year. With his size and his potential for strength, some of those doubles are going to turn into home runs. And honestly, whether that happens in 2016 or not, I think he's still going to be a reasonably undervalued player just because he's falling into that post-hype space, even though he was a even though those steals and the runs made him a no shit top 40 outfielder in mixed leagues last year, so he should get a bigger hype bump than I think he's going to get, and he's someone who has, you know, quite a bit of upside in 2015.
Well, since we're going with young players, I'm going to continue the theme and not pick somebody on the older side. I'm going to go with Stephen Piscotty on the Cardinals. And again, this is a non-keeper because, you know, in Dynasty and in Keeper, I think everybody's going to be in on him. But there's two factors of here. One is the raw power on him is actually low. So people are going to look at that, and I think expect, you know, kind of a more of the same. But he's just such a good hitter. I just love his swing. I love to watch him, and I think there's going to be some growth there. But the second thing about him, and this can apply to a lot of players on this team, just because of what's happened with Jason Hayward and a couple other free agents, there's almost this anti-Cardinal bias I see going around where people don't want to touch players on the team. And that's just kind of weird because, you know, I know they've lost some people and they might not be as good and the Cubs are the early favorites, but the Cardinals still look pretty good to me. And Piscotty's a guy in a one-and-done league I just really wouldn't want to get on the ground floor on and, you know, just kind of play. You know, this is somebody who, you know, if you look at his 162-game pace, you know, 18 home runs, 100 runs batted in, 305 batting average, you know, that plays. And, you know, we know he's not going to play 162 games, but if he comes close to 20 home runs, I'm not going to be surprised by that at all. So I think he's someone's going to overlook because of the half season and because he's not one of the sexier rookies out there, at least in terms of from a fantasy perspective.
Very few teams had as fun of an offseason as the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm going to go with Patrick Corbin, though. There's a lot of names you could pick from, whether it's underrated guys or guys who could take a step forward. And, bless you, Mike.
No, that was me.
Oh, that was I couldn't tell.
I
couldn't get to the mute button. I tried to get to the mute button.
The one time it wasn't on.
Yeah, I know. What are the odds?
Corbin, he's 26. I think people have forgotten about him because he basically came back last year, pitched about 85 innings. But the velocity was there. The stuff wasn't diminished. The strikeouts were actually up. The ground ball rate was the same. He got hit pretty hard, but I think that's just kind of him coming back. So I'm not worried about it. I think Patrick Corbin's going to be fine. And if I'm going to take a shot on somebody in Arizona, I think it's him. As much as I sort of like Robbie Ray, and I've kind of adopted him everywhere in my fantasy leagues, I don't really know that he takes it to a whole nother level. I think Corbin kind of is already there.
I really like Corbin. That's not a secret to anybody.
He's gonna go really late in drafts, I feel like. I don't think people are gonna draft him as though he's a established kind of guy. I really don't think so.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what's going to happen with him. I'm also curious to see if there's going to be any talks of an innings limit with him, just because he's coming off the partial season from Tommy John. But even if so, I mean, where he's probably going to end up going, that won't even matter.
Right. I mean, that's part of the reason why they did the Shelby Miller deal. Probably they knew they were going to need innings. So, yeah.
Yep. So I am drawing the Rockies. And I am going to take any opportunity I can to talk more about Corey Dickerson. The partial season in 2015 was just really shitty, and the plantar fasciitis just absolutely destroyed any sort of establishment of his legitimacy that should have happened. But even in the small sample of games that he did play in around the injury, he still hit 304 with 10 home runs in 65 games. And, you know, you can prorate that as much as you want. It's kind of dumb because Dickerson's never played in more than 130 games in a season. But, you know, the talent at the plate is legit. And, you know, you hope that injury has now moved past him with a full off season to recover. Although, as we all know, plantar fasciitis is something that can return if it's not completely fixed. That said, even an injury risk version of Dickerson is still probably a pretty close to a top 50 player, and my guess is that he is going to be taken somewhere in the 7th to 8th round range this year, which is going to be prime value at that point in my opinion.
He also broke his ribs when he came back from the plantar fasciitis as well.
Yep,
I mean, he had a crazy
season.
Yeah, it was terrible injury wise, like unlucky.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was, yeah. I just traded for him at TDGX, so very excited.
Yeah, you dynasty guys are paying attention all year round. I'm gonna go with somebody who is. It's hard to call him a sleeper, but I think he's going to be undervalued just based on what I've seen in some of these early mocks, and that's Yasiel Puig. I think that people. After overvaluing him for 2 years in a row, and I know he had a down year, I think people are just completely discounting the potential he has to be a fantasy earner and to be the dynamic player that he is. And I like guys like this who are going to go possibly in the 5th or 6th round and have the potential to do more. I've never viewed him as a cornerstone player, and I still don't. But I could see him returning 3rd or 4th round value quite easily if he runs again. And last year with the hamstring, that was the issue. It's just difficult to expect somebody with his level of talent, as I said before, and with what he's capable of doing when he's on the field, having another down year as long as he's healthy. Health is obviously the key. We're going to want to watch him in spring training. But I think if he looks good out there, I think if he looks solid, You have to invest in him, and you have to kind of view him as more than what he's been so far. I don't know, the things I don't like to speculate on, I don't know what the relationship was with him and Don Mattingly, but I have the feeling that not having Mattingly there is going to help him as well.
And I think I have the last team.
I have the last team. But
oh, there's another one?
After San Francisco?
Oh, there's another one. Oops.
We're doing good.
No, I have San Francisco. You have the Padres.
Oh, I have the Padres?
Oops. Don't try to pawn off the Padres on me.
Oh, damn it. I don't have any Padres players.
It's your worst nightmare.
It really is. Is Will Myers count?
Anybody counts.
I could care less about the Padres. I'm just being honest. That's all I got. I thought I had San Francisco.
Really, we're really devolving here into care about teams at the end of this.
Strong finish by me. Okay, Will Myers was not that good last year. I take all of that back.
We had him in labor.
My God.
Disappointed us.
How'd it get so bad? Will Myers. And he's first base.
He was hurt a lot.
Wow. I take all of the things I said about Will Myers back.
Do you want to take another? I mean, he's a sleeper from the standpoint that he wasn't good.
Yeah. All right. That's fine. I'll buy that. He can't possibly be worse, Will Myers.
Well, I don't know about that. That sounds like a challenge. All right, well, that leaves me with the Giants, and this is nobody's idea of a team that has sleepers, because the people who are not good on this team are. Generally pretty terrible. But that said, the one guy I will talk about, and I'm gonna return to the old outfielder thing, and throw Angel Pagan out there. I think he was not good in 2015. He was not good. He was better than I thought in 2014. But he doesn't play a ton. He's not very good, but also nobody wants him. So in an NL-only format, I think he could play his way into a half-decent lineup spot if things break right. And if not, you probably will not have to spend really anything to get him. There's really very few people on the Giants that I want to own based on where I think they're going to go this year. I'm not much of a Matt Duffy believer. I'm definitely not a Jeff Samardzija believer. Maybe Jake Peavy. Maybe I'd take a chance on Jake Peavy for a couple of bucks.
I have a name for you. Sergio Romo.
Yeah.
Santiago Casilla was not good last year, and Romo actually was over 11 on the strikeout rate, walk rate, sub 2 walk rate. The slider, I mean, he's weird because he throws it 60% of the time, but he still gets swings and misses on it, and he was a lot better than Casilla, so I could easily see a scenario in which he becomes the closer again. Casilla's 35, too.
I could see that because, I mean, Casilla has a history of being bad and staying in the role, so...
That's true.
I don't think Bochy's going to be very quick to make a change there. I think he'd have to be pretty terrible.
Don't rule it out.
You're really focused on relievers, aren't you, George?
It's that that magical time of the year where I have nothing to do but look at relievers.
God.
Yeah. Happy holidays, everyone.
Indeed. So why don't we take a quick break and come back and wrap things up? Back. Thank you for listening to episode 72 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I am Brett Sayer. Mike is Mike Janella. George is George Bissell. Read us at baseballprospectus.com. How many times can I say baseballprospectus.com? We are going to be reconvening in the new year to bring you our positional series on the fantasy team, and it's going to be awesome. You're going to love it, and you should come and read it every day because we're going to have lots of stuff. If you don't care about fantasy, I don't know why you're listening to this email, listening to this podcast, or especially this late in the podcast, but I mean, thank you for listening anyway. But we also have our top 10 prospects that have been rolling out over the past month, and we'll continue into February, and lots of other fun content for you readers. With that, this is the last podcast of 2015. We will see you in 2016, assuming the world doesn't end. So have a good one. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Happy holidays. Happy New Year.